This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we've got one sponsor of the show, and that is our good friends at Jamf Software, makers of Jamf Pro and Jamf Now, and we'll tell you more about those as the show goes on. Bradley, we're back.
We are back, and we're going to wrap up our series on devices to deploy and reasons why. And we are kind of wrapping up with the iPad and iOS. And I would say, like, this is, in some ways, the overarching kind of theme of the entire show. I mean, obviously, we discuss other things, but that's a common thing we discuss. And so, we covered Macs, we covered desktops overall with Windows, and Chrome OS as well. And then we had a big iPad price cut with the new device. And so, this is kind of a great time to discuss it. You know, and something I was thinking about with... I don't manage many PCs anymore. I have a few that still are under my control. And I'll tell you, when something goes wrong, like there are so many more things with PC land where it's like, all right, we're just going to have to reformat this computer. But I don't even feel that way about Macs. Like, there rarely is a time now where I feel like, all right, I'm going to have to archive and install. But I had an issue like with Internet Explorer 11 on a Windows 7 machine that just was like, what it was doing is it was somehow just misbehaving. And it was keeping the Google Drive Sync client from working because, oddly enough, that uses a lot of IE's rendering engine in the background. Why? I don't know. But I finally got it fixed after, like, rebuilding some like, folders and stuff. But, like, I've just realized over the years, like, Windows just is unforgiving when it's jacked up.
Yeah, that really feels kind of like the past now, doesn't it? I mean, that reminds me of, like, when I was at school, that's what we would do with computers is we would try a couple of things, and then if it didn't work, we would just back up our data and wipe the whole thing and start again, you know, and not being able to have a kind of clean edge to things. That's the difference between a modern platform and a legacy platform, is that on a modern platform, you should have no fear of installing and uninstalling software. And they should not be able to interfere with each other. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, that's one of our bullet points for tonight. But, you know, on iOS, it's like, I don't care what software you install. I can get rid of that in a second if I need to. And there's nothing you can do to it that will, you know, ruin the operating system or, you know, blow up a shared library or something like that. It's always, those edges are so clean in installation and uninstallation are, they're atomic operations. They're not something that sort of partially happens and partially doesn't. And that, to me, that's super important these days.
And I've even been running the same Mac OS probably 4 or 5 years, like the same install. And so it's even very modern there. And it's just old, brings me back to my old PC days. So first reason we're going to discuss on why you might want to deploy iOS. And if you haven't listened to the previous shows, you definitely want to catch up and do that on reasons to deploy, because we're making the case for all of them in some ways. Number one, it's a very mature OS. And so this is originally the iPhone OS, came out in 2007. So at this point, like, we have a good mix of stability plus advanced features. And so there's not as much low-hanging fruit as I feel like there used to be, where it's like these things clearly just, like, it can't do this. And I think it brings me back to, like, some of the original, like, do you remember when the original iPhone couldn't even send picture messages? Like, that feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, no copy and paste either.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, like, you had to retype, because you couldn't copy and paste it, you had to, like, retype a URL on the Safari browser to get a picture to show up. It was crazy. it's like, I mean, iOS is the default platform for just almost everybody day-to-day. Certainly, like, the app.
Yeah.
The app ecosystem for people's personal computers is huge. I mean, the whole thing, there's an app for that, et cetera, et cetera. And that's built on the all that's built on top of iOS. And so it's the platform that in some ways is the most exciting, but it's also not new anymore. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the way I describe it is that iOS is a platform that sets the computer industry agenda now. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the most numerous platform or it's even the most popular platform by the numbers or by sales or anything like that. But the thing is, like, when Apple stands up at WWDC in the summer and says, this is what iOS 11 is going to be like, that sets the agenda for everybody else to react to for that year. Google doesn't actually have the power to do that with Android because it takes so long for anything that Google announces to actually become part of a significant proportion of the installed base, whereas Apple, when they ship in September, October time, within a month, that will be on more than 50% of devices. you know, and within a year it'll be 70%, and within 3 years it will be 90%. Those features will be deployed to, you know. So in that sense, Apple's ability to control the software and ship the software to not just new devices, but a significant proportion of the installed base means that the features that they ship are features that people start using in the culture very quickly. You know, iMessage stickers or AirDrop or whatever feature it is, you know, Apple Watch or Handoff or something like that. And in one sense, that's kind of why iOS is so important, is because it's a platform that moves the industry forward now, even as, you know, Google ships more phones, or, well, Android ships on more phones. Google themselves don't ship more phones. I really feel that iOS is, at least in the West, at least in developed markets and developed countries, it's the platform that, you know, shapes the way the future is going to be for the next few years. That's kind of how I look at it.
The stickers is a great example because, like, you know, weeks after iOS 10 came out, people were sending me stickers, and, like, it's not even like that was, like, they just found them. Obviously, there are some usability problems there, but I remember back, you know, it's kind of like when the new Mac OS would come out and teachers say, oh, what's new? It's like, oh, probably nothing you're going to use.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some weird thing about Windows, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, with iOS, it's like, oh, these new features, you will want to use those.
Yeah.
And part of those are, you know, obviously macOS is even more mature, but yeah, it's just easier to get to those.
Yeah, I mean, iOS is in this kind of weird stage of its life where it's not like there are things like copy and paste that still have to be added to iOS, but at the same time, there's still things you want iOS to have that it doesn't have. And I suppose for me, that's what makes it such an interesting platform, is that, you know, iOS 11 is coming. You know, we were texting just earlier today, you know, iOS 11 has got to be a big release for iPad, because we've got a lot of things that we need to happen for iPad there. And I think there's still an opportunity to do a lot with iOS, but in a new kind of way. You know, I think I've always believed that the people who said, well, you know, iOS would be great if it had a VGA plug, a USB port, and a finder, like, that's just such a fundamentally wrong way to look at the way the future has to be, you know, and opening up a file system and opening up a shell and things like that. It's just like, no, don't do that. You know, it's got to be something different. It's got to be something more secure, more understandable, more usable, less confusing to normal people. And I'm really interested to see how Apple takes iOS to the next level, right? Because iOS at the moment is a very competent operating system for a very carefully defined range of tasks, right? And I think the way I look at it is that if you're somebody like me who basically gets to define their work experience, you can make iOS work for you, because you can just sort of refuse to do the things that iOS doesn't do. You know, I'm like, well, you know, no Xcode in iOS. Well, I'm not going to be a programmer anymore. That's fine for Fraser. He can do that, right? But if you have to, you know, ship iOS apps, or if you have to, you know, run mail merges in Excel every week or something, then you cannot switch to iOS. And I'm aware of that, right? But the argument I've always tried to make is that in school, like, for the things we want to do with a computer in school, iOS is a great platform for that. And certainly if you want things like a tablet, Bradley, you know, I mean, you know, it's been like 5 years since anybody asked me, why do you not have Android tablets in your school? Because the answer is now so obvious, is that A, they're garbage, and B, the software is garbage too. And, you know, why would you bother doing that? So that's kind of the basics of iOS. It's mature but not complete, I think, is maybe how I would put it.
So the second thing is security and support. I would say, from an end user perspective, and I'm not really going to delve on the underpinnings of it, but there is just less opportunities for users to get into trouble. Everything is just built in, and you don't even have to think about it. Devices are supported for a long time with new software updates, so they can be used for many years. And certainly, like where we are now, the devices are so powerful, it's not even like it's going to be falling apart hardware-wise in 3 years. Incredibly rock solid. And in some ways, I mean, there's some things that just, like you said, there's some things you can't do. And some of that has to do with the security, but it's time for people to, you know, figure out new ways to do those things.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at something like iOS and you know, how Android developers sleep at night, I don't know, but iOS has been around for 10 years and there has not been a significant large-scale security breach at the platform level, and that is a track record that I don't know that many other operating systems have achieved. the devices are, you know, they have such good security capabilities built in. I mean, like Touch ID, right? You know, we just take Touch ID for granted, right? But think what that's done for security, you know. It's, you know, instantaneous unlocking with, you know, very difficult to fake biometrics, backed by encryption, secure enclaves at the silicon level. You know, there's like so much stuff going on there, and it's such a consistent, hermetically sealed platform that, you know, I sleep a whole lot better at night knowing that all my users are on iOS than on any other platform, just because of stuff like that. Like, it's not that I don't have to think about security, I do, but I can think about it and know that it's okay. You know, and for me, that's really quite important.
Well, and this is, you know, don't forget about, you know, tools like Guided Access that are supported at the MDM level. This is actually something I've been using this week as we've been getting prep for our standardized test. And like, the app literally will not run if Guided Access is not enabled. And I just from my phone can enable that profile on those, that scope, and off and running. And it's just so stinking easy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that, you know, we've been looking at from an exam point of view as well. And, you know, in days past, it was difficult to think, how are we going to do exams on an iOS device? And we've been doing it since like iOS 4, and it was easy. It was okay in iOS 4, but today it's just like, it's like one button. You know, I can set up one thing and go boom, and my devices are, you know, controlled at a network level. They're controlled at an application level. They're even controlled at like a what you're using the screen can you touch level. With, you know, stuff like Guided Access, and it's incredibly, the controls are incredibly deep, and they're very easy to use. So that's, for me, that's something that's really powerful on iOS as well. And the last thing, of course, particularly in a school situation, Bradley, is like the deep support for assistive technologies. You know, whatever kind of you know, impairment or difficulty that a pupil has, there's probably something on iOS that can work with that. You know, whether it's a vision issue, a color perception issue, even something like, you know, autism or a motor control issue. I mean, I don't know if you've looked at some of the stuff in iOS for handling people who have got like fine motor control problems, and making touch targets much, much easier for them to hit. And also for older people as well, if you're in a sort of adult education situation, the stuff you can do there is really, really impressive as well. So that's important as well.
Third thing is the ability of the iPad to kind of be a broad machine. So our thoughts there are, you can really use it anywhere. It's not just a general purpose, like sit at your desktop computer. And in some ways that can be a negative, like to be, depending on if you're the type of person ergonomically that does sit at a desk all day, maybe that is difficult. But when you look at like what you're asking these machines to do, they can do a lot of things. Like, they can be used in gym class. They can be used on the football field, on the baseball field. Think about like apps like Coach's Eye that I wish would have been around when I'd been in school. Think about art projects. Coach's Eye is so good. Yeah. And all these things, it's a blank canvas, as they say, that you can, you know, build on top of. Again, is it the best machine for every type class? Or every type use case? No. But it's also a very broad machine. And I would say there are more situations where like the Mac falls apart. You can imagine like the Mac out there, like using the FaceTime cam, trying to record a baseball player. it's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
Obviously you can't draw on the screen. And again, for certain type classes, the Mac is going to be better. But over a broad spectrum of like, what are we asking computers to do in schools? The iPad, I would say it should be your default choice.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about, you know, what's the best tool for every job, that leads you down a path of having like six different platforms in your school. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what's the best one for collaborating on docs? Well, that's Chromebooks. Well, let's get a whole bunch of Chromebooks. What's the best thing for doing CAD CAM? Oh, that's probably a PC. Let's get a PC suite. Okay, what's the best for doing video editing and audio mastering? Well, that's a Mac. So let's get Macs as well. I'm like, well, I can't afford, you know, to have all these different platforms. So the way I look at it is like, what's the platform that lets me get the most jobs done without having to have like three or four different platforms in the school? And for me, that decision, you know, even back in the early days of iPad, was iOS. But the thing is, I came to that looking at the question of what I want to teach in the school, and then what computer platform gets me those things, as opposed to saying, well, I want to have Microsoft Office capability. What platform gets me that? And I think that's maybe the difference between the way I came to using iOS and the way some other people sort of approach, you know, what computer platform are you going to get? Is like, I'm not necessarily looking at, you know, I've got to have Office and I've got to have Photoshop and I've got to have this CAD/CAM package or whatever. It's more, I want to teach computer programming. I want to teach creative writing. I want to teach history. I want to teach internet research. I want to teach these subjects, these sciences. I want to do data analysis. I want to do all these things. Can I get all those things on this platform? The answer, even in the early days, was yes. And in a fashion, you know, we had a, you know, an early version of iWork and things like that. And they were good enough for what we wanted to do at the time. And I think the surprising thing actually over these years is that the iPad is now able to do so much. You know, I think it's actually, in some ways, it's more surprising to me that we can do what we can do than that, you know, it was never going to work for us in the first place. So it's, for me, that's kind of the thing. Like when I was trying to explain to people like what is an iPad back in 2010, I always described it like that. It's a plain thing that becomes whatever it is you want to do. You want to make it a book? Okay, let's make it a book. You want to make it a drawing tablet? Let's draw on it. Let's make music with it. Let's shoot video with it. Let's do all these different things. And every day and every week we do, you know, an enormous range of things with the iPad that we never did with Macs back in the day when we had Macs, and we probably never would do with Macs even today, just because of the, you know, the complexity or the time cost or the lack of devices for the budget or whatever that we would normally do with Macs. We do those things with iOS every day.
Next thing is mature management. And this is something that is you know, fairly recent. With iOS 9.3, like I feel like it's very easy to scale up from 50 devices to 10,000. Mm-hmm. You don't have to... you know, choose just one MDM vendor. There's a broad range to choose from, although some like support new features faster and some still don't support the latest features. So that's something to consider. But the MDM protocol from Apple is open. And so It's not like only the preferred partners can work with them. I would highly recommend avoiding the free kind. But the things you can do to control them is really deep and fantastic. Like I mentioned, I'm able to, from my phone, lock every iPad within about 5 seconds to our standardized testing exam in the app for that. And then, you know, when we're done, I disable that profile and it falls apart. It's really fantastic. It's really possible to do a zero touch deployment depending on how you're setting it up. Otherwise it's even, you know, it's simple to even just a few minutes per device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a genuine zero touch deployment is sort of a sort of university level thing, perhaps, where you're dealing with people who are adults and can create their own Apple IDs or probably have their own Apple IDs already. A genuine zero touch deployment is something you could do for that or maybe for staff in a business or something. But I measured it, I think, when we did our last deployment. I was on average spending like 1 minute per device to go from an unconfigured device to something assigned to one user. And that was pretty cool. And that's the kind of thing that I think is realistic in K-12 situations right now is about a minute per device, not counting like unboxing time and stuff like that, but in terms of actual software configuration and assignment, about a minute per device.
Do you think Apple should be in the MDM game more so than they are with just macOS Server? Should like they have a hosted iCloud MDM for schools for free or something for low cost?
Maybe. You know, there was a time when I would have said absolutely yes to that question. But, you know, you look at something like iTunes U now and you think, well, Apple seemed really stretched very thin for resources to get these things done. Would I like to be on Apple's MDM? Or would I rather be on, like, Jam for AirWatch or something where those people, all they do is MDM and that's all they care about. And if I don't like what they do over a three-year period with MDM, I'm going to switch to somebody else at the end. And I think I'd much rather, you know, use a bit of my budget to make sure I've got those tools, because for me and for you, Bradley, I know as well that having powerful tools is what keeps the cost of your iOS deployment down, right? If your MDM doesn't do what you need it to do and you have to spend a lot of time intervening on individual devices instead, then, you know, that just increases the cost of your deployment so massively that it's actually cheaper to pay for MDM if you also properly account for staff time than to cheap out on your MDM and spend a whole bunch of your working week fixing individual devices that haven't got the configuration that they need to have. And I'm not absolutely sure that I would completely want to put everything into the Apple basket right now.
Well, and going back to those tools, how they save you time, and which is money, that's how this got it accesses. I mean, rather than having to go touch every device when it comes to standardized testing day, I do it within 5 seconds. I'm like, what's that? What's that time saving worth to us as a staff? A lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, MDMs cost money. But over a course of a 3 or 4 year lease, like, that is so, you look at like cost per iPad per day, it's nothing. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And we're about to do the same thing. And, you know, our testing environment, which has just moved over to be an iOS compatible platform this year, it's gone to HTML5. And when we used to do that on Macs, like, we would still get out our old laptops and plug them in, it would take me multiple hours to get ready for those tests. And then I would basically administer them, and it would take me, you know, 20 minutes per session, and then multiple. This test is comprised of multiple sessions over the course of a few days. It's, you know, the time cost of me just standing there clicking buttons on Macs was just incredible, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, making that a lot easier on iOS.
Next up, a significant range of high-quality, first-party free software. So out of the box, the iPad comes with a ton of software for free. The iWork suite, Pages, Keynote, Numbers, GarageBand, iMovie, Photos app. The new Clips app is actually fairly decent. I use that today. Yep. We did our, because it's not built in, it's in the App Store, but we did our, like, third grade egg drop. So the kids, like, researched how to build contraptions and, like, studying, like, how fast they would fall and, you know, how far they would fall and what speed they would get. And so they all built contraptions. And so I recorded every one of them, then used the Clips app to, like, stip them all together in, like, a 2-minute video, add some music. It took me about maybe 5 minutes to do that. Pretty neat.
No, I was pretty impressed with Clips. I had a little play with it in France when we were on holiday last week, and I can see how that would be good fun. People enjoy that.
iTunes U, again, you know, it's not a bit as frequent as we like, but it is there. It's a free learning management platform. Apple Classroom, which we mentioned before, is a device management tool for teachers. They can run on their iPads, so they can manage their classroom iPads and making sure they're you know, on task and, you know, can push out things to them as well. And then, as we mentioned a few weeks ago, and Swift Playgrounds, which is the newest thing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Swift Playgrounds is that it's not just a programming tool, but it's also a complete coding curriculum as well. You know, it's like free textbooks as well, you know, and free teacher guides as well. So it's, you know, in some ways you got to look at the whole offering in the round and say, well, you know, it's not just the device, but it's also these MDM hooks for management. It's this software pack or these multiple software packages that we can get, plus all the built-in stuff as well. You know, calendar, mail client, photo management system, blah, 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 whatever else is in there, web browser, all that kind of stuff. And then it's all these other things that go around with it as well.
Before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. It's the great folks at Jamf. Jamf Pro is the solution for deploying, managing, and securing your Apple devices. With over 3 million students being empowered by Jamf every day, you can bring learning to a whole new level for your students by providing the tools they need to be successful in today's classroom environment. Start a free trial at Jamf.com. That's JAMF.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring this show. So what's next on the list? Now, this is, to me, one of the things way back in, like, I saw with the iOS could be huge for us, is the huge amount of third-party software at really affordable prices. I mean, I've had teachers, like, when they say, okay, what's it going to cost to put this app on all my iPads? I'm like, oh, $80. They're like, oh, $80? That's too expensive. And I have to tell them, like, we're used to paying, like, $50 per machine. In the olden days, like, this is really, really cheap. Even the educational version of Office that we would buy for Macs is $50 per computer. That's the educational edition.
Yeah, and we're paying what are we paying, like, £1.50 per student per month at the moment for our Office. And we don't give it to every student, we just give it to the ones that specifically need Office. But, you know, peanuts compared to what we used to pay. I mean, what was Photoshop? You know, have you ever looked at the Adobe licensing for schools?
Well, I mean, there's a reason college students would always pirate it. and I think, you know, you make a great point here in the notes. Like, name the last app that launched on the desktop as a native app that was, like, huge. Everything is moving on the desktop to the web, and everything is on, obviously, iOS is native apps.
Yeah, I mean, literally, what was the last major app that came out as a native desktop app? I mean, like iTunes? Steam?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's something that was, like, mass market. I mean, you think about... there's just not many.
It's not a game, you know.
You know, everything is moving web-based. Office 365, Google Drive, and Google Docs, obviously, are native to the web. And in some ways, that's been, I think, what has hurt Dropbox long-term. So what made Dropbox so great early on was, like, its integration with the file system. But then I feel like as time has evolved, that's also limited it, because they're so tied into everything having to work well with the local file system, it's limited of what they can do on the web.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of an example of where, like, desktop thinking going into the cloud and mobile world is a limiting factor, I think, you know. Most iOS users have a Dropbox or Google Drive or an iCloud Drive or something, and those do have files and folders, yes. But, you know, just to slavishly bring along the old world is to me a very limiting way to look at it. And I mean, if you look at most people's desktop usage, you know, what is it, like, probably 75% of the time is spent in the browser, and then, you know, another proportion of time is spent in apps that basically are little web browsers, like Slack, for example. And then you've got three or four major suites, right? You've got the Microsoft Office suite, you've got the Adobe Creative suite, you've got the Apple Pro apps, and what else? You know, you've either got, like, extremely niche products, like we keep talking about CAD CAM, or maybe some music production stuff. And, you know, what else do people do on desktops? You know, those are really and truly the main things. And I think the fact that so much has gone to web apps is a very interesting aspect to it. I mean, you look at things that are apps on mobile, like Netflix, for example. There's no Netflix desktop application. You know, it's just a web browser, you know. Google Docs, there's no desktop Google Docs application, it's just a web browser, you know. And I think that's, in some ways, that's where Chrome OS has got such a great opportunity, is because you could actually take somebody's laptop, give them a Chrome OS device and not tell them, and they probably wouldn't notice for about 3 or 4 days, you know. And that's, to me, that's what's kind of interesting about the desktop right now, is that so much of it is on the web. Like, what are we really doing on the desktop? You know, is it new stuff or is it legacy stuff? And, you know, we came to a thing not so long ago where we were looking at, I was evaluating a range of productivity suites like Office, Google Docs, and iWork for compliance with a certain exam standard that we have to meet. And I found that none of the productivity suites written or rewritten in the last 20 years supported all the features that this exam had been written to. You know, so the exam included things like mail merging between a database and a spreadsheet, or like doing relational databases on the desktop, you know. And you look at Google Docs, it's got no relational database component. iWork's got no relational database component. You know, it's just Microsoft Office from the 1980s has evolved, you know, and survived to the point where it's got those kind of things. So it's interesting that even the tasks that these suites are being asked to do are starting to become different again, you know, because, you know, people don't tend to look at iWork or Google Docs and say, well, it doesn't have Microsoft Access equivalent, therefore I can't use it. I mean, some people do, sure, and I'm one of those people. But, you know, it's not holding back those suites and those platforms because they don't have a relational database on the desktop, because so much of that stuff has gone to, you know, an app like Airtable, for example, which is a relational database on the web, which, incidentally, Google should buy tomorrow and integrate into Google Docs. That would really be an interesting thing for them to do. But, you know, that's, you know, mobile is where the action is.
Yeah. If you're making something and you're wanting to hit them most people as possible, if it's a tablet or a phone app, obviously, like, a native app is the way to go. But if it's something for the desktop, the web is the way to go because it works for everybody. So next, number 7, accessory support. I mean, tons of accessories work with iOS and iPad. Because of its mobility, it can do tons of stuff. So just various adapters to access your legacy stuff, even wired Ethernet. Mm-hmm. I would consider even Apple TV an accessory. You can do AirPlay. Tons of cases, stands, tripods, camera lens adapters. External battery packs. Like, I mean, you name it, there's an accessory for it. And so it's very expandable out.
And increasingly esoteric things as well. You know, if you go into the Apple Store, for example, you've got these kind of like gimbal handheld things for your iPhone that, you know, it's like a Steadicam for an iPhone. Have you seen those? It's like a pistol grip sort of thing. And you put the iPhone on it, it's got a kind of three-axis movement, so you can move your hand around to any position, and the phone stays rock still in the middle, and it's all connected to the Lightning connector. There's an app for iOS that makes this all work together and stuff, and it's really cool. And those are the kind of things, like, if your school was desktop computer-based, for example, you know, how can you slot your stuff into that, you know? Tripod adapters, you don't tend to get them for laptop computers. But even also, like, think about it the other way around as well, Bradley. Like, your iOS device can be an accessory for some other thing, right? So, for example, we've got a Sphero robot and a drone in school, which we can use in Swift Playgrounds. We can actually program their behavior and use the iOS device as like an accessory or controller to this other thing, as well as having things adapt your iOS device for other purposes as well. If that makes sense, like you can get controller apps that connect to other pieces of hardware, microscopes and things as well, and science data loggers, all that kind of stuff. And I know you can do some of that in desktop computers as well, but the ease with which that can be done in iOS is pretty powerful.
Fewer things to break, in my opinion. We have these little zoomy cameras that the teachers use, and it's like $40 cameras plug ups to their Macs. And the software is terrible. It always looks like it was written in 1980, and it like never defaults to the zoomy camera. It always defaults to the FaceTime camera. It's like, how is that even a thing? It's like the software y'all made doesn't default to your camera.
Yeah, don't even start about the smart board software.
Yes. Next, mature hardware. This is obviously new. This hardware is rock solid at this point, and it's inexpensive. The $299 iPad for education is no slouch for anybody.
Nope, that's a genuinely great iPad. And I think in some ways, like with iOS, the hardware is much more mature than the software, at least for the iPad, you know, if not for the phone. And I think in some ways that's what sort of frustrates me a little bit about people who are like, when's the new iPad coming out? When's the new iPad coming out? I'm just like, when's the new iOS coming out? You know, because it's the iOS that makes it interesting, not the hardware. Like I said before, it's like a blank slate of glass on which you can put anything you want to happen. And I think for me, one of the interesting things from a management of a large fleet is, you know, I've been doing this for like 7 years now, and we have averaged like 2-3% both combined failure and damage rate over the course of 7 years, and that's, I'm really impressed with that, and I think that's only getting better. You know, it's better cases, better understanding of the failure modes, more robust designs, you know, and you can see with the iPhone 7, for example, even fewer switches, right, fewer ports, right, the headphone jack going away, the virtual home button that doesn't actually move, all of these things. I mean, we haven't had home button failure for quite a few years now anyway, but still, you know, one less thing to worry about is welcome too.
We actually had our first iPad break of the year a few weeks ago. Mm. Apple went $291 to replace it, but I can buy one of the new iPads for $299. So we did not pay Apple to replace that.
Yeah, I think about the price that we pay for iPad Pro screen repairs, I could actually buy outright a new iPad for less money than that.
Next thing on the list, AirPrint. So, like, AirPrint is not perfect, but it is mainstream at this point. So, like, I remember, you know, three, four years ago, expecting that to be on your big MFP devices, multifunction printers, was laughable. Now, it's pretty much built in. It's not perfect. There are still certain things it doesn't do well, but it's built in, and overall, for basic stuff, it works well. Again, you're not going to be printing, like, booklets on this with collating, no, and stapling, no. But overall, like, you can do front and back sided. You can change it to color, black and white. You can print multiple copies of it. Come a long way, and for the most part, it works pretty well. So it's not so much that the technology caught up, as like everybody around it caught up.
Yeah, it's like the implementation of those things, and that's something that's also true of iOS apps. I think is that, like, a really well written iOS app can do a lot more than the average iOS app can do, and you see it sometimes when. And some developers just go way above and beyond and do a great job, and they use all the API features. You can actually do tons more than you think you can do with iOS. It's just that many developers don't implement it all just yet. I would really like to see some enhancements to AirPrint in iOS 11. I think it being able to expose more of the features that your printer has, I think would be quite a compelling thing if it were possible in the future.
Number 10, not that I said the last thing, we have a bonus. Number 10 means iOS 10 means 10 years of iPhone. So this ecosystem is certainly, as we mentioned at the beginning, it's mainstream now. It's not a flash in the pan. It's around. It's supported by a lot of people and a lot of hardware vendors, a lot of software vendors. It's not anything people laugh about. It's like, okay, that's a toy device. That's new. We don't support that yet. Like, it's the expectation is that it'll be there and it'll be, you know, and expected to work. My question is, like, it's familiarity with iPad and iPhone, both running iOS. Is that a good thing or bad thing for the iPad long term?
I think it's a good thing. And in some ways, it's kind of like a deflector shield for iPad at the moment, because, you know, while the iPad's still trying to find its way and, you know, figure out, you know, the market's trying to figure out still, even to this day, like, how does the iPad sell more like a laptop or more like a smartphone? And I think the answer is obvious, it's much more like a laptop. But being part of the iPhone rocket ship, if you like, has, I think, genuinely helped the iPad through this kind of rough period where its, you know, sales have been a bit up and, well, I was going to say they've been a bit up and down, but they've mostly been down. I think it has helped. And I kind of think, like, you know, you put one question here, do we need to have an iPad OS? And I think some people have suggested that, but I don't really see how, like what power features are there going to be on an iPad that I don't want on my iPhone, right? If an iPad is going to support, let's say, for example, let's take an example, like, if iPads are going to support your ability to plug a USB hard drive into the USB adapter and mount it somewhere in iOS, why would I not want that to be possible on my phone as well? You know, and okay, there are screen size things, you know, okay, split screen multitasking doesn't make a ton of sense on a phone, but for most other capabilities, like, another example that I always want with iOS is the ability to do, like, multiple file operations at one time, like to take 10 files and put them all into Google Drive right now. Why would I not want to be able to do that on my phone as well? And I think if we were to split up iOS into iPad edition and iPhone edition, two things would happen. One, each side would be weakened by that, because the iPad wouldn't get all the work that goes into the phone, you know, like iMessage enhancements and stuff like that. And at the same time, the phone wouldn't be as powerful as it could be as well, because iPad will get quote-unquote power user features, but, you know, there are iPhone power users as well, and those people should have those features too. So I would really strongly argue against, you know, bifurcating the operating system into two different ones. And really and truly, what I would say is, like, just put more effort into the iPad version. You know, it's the bits that only make sense on the iPad that are getting neglected. But the fundamental APIs and stuff should all be the same. And it's just a matter of, you know, putting a bit more effort into the stuff that the iPad alone has. You can see they clearly don't get the same kind of engineering resources as the iPhone gets. And who can blame Apple for that? But, you know, it's true.
I would love to see picture-in-picture come to the iPhone.
Well, you know, with the iPhone 7 Plus, there are some interesting arguments for maybe there should be, like, landscape split screen on the iPhone 7 Plus. I mean, I was doing a thing the other day where I was chatting with Apple support on my phone, and they wanted me to go into the settings and get the serial number for my AirPods, right, which only shows up when your AirPods are connected. So you have to go into settings, about AirPods, and then get the serial number in there. But the serial number wasn't copyable or selectable, so I had to keep switching between the settings that I could remember, like, four digits at a time, switch back to the chat apps, paste in the four digits, and then go back and type in the next four digits and so on. And that's a case where, like, split screen on my iPhone would have been really welcome. It's not something you're going to use a lot, but occasionally it might get you at a pinch.
It's actually on the underside of the case on the AirPods, but you literally have to have a flashlight to read it.
I'm holding my AirPods case right now. Yeah, there's no way I can read that.
I'd have a flashlight to read it.
I'm 38 years old. My eyes can't read that kind of light gray on white at that size.
So to wrap it up, let's we've laid out reasons to deploy iPad. Like, what's wrong with iOS? Like, heading into iOS 11, like, what is wrong? You mentioned the bulk file operations. What else?
Yeah, I mean, the thing you have to understand, right, is that nobody has got a longer list of complaints about iOS than people like me, right? People who use iOS every single day, we know where all the problems are, right? People who use the Mac think they know what the problems are with iOS, but they've got no idea compared to, you know, people who know every corner of iOS. And I think there's some stuff like everything that's iPad exclusive needs a good overhaul, right? So the multitasking, the split screen stuff is nice and easily understandable, but it needs to have a whole bunch more features, you know. So things like I want to flip the two apps from side to side. I want this app on the left, this app on the right. I don't want to have to go and reset up the whole world again. The ability to store like pairs of apps that I want together. You know, like every time we do a podcast, Bradley, I want Google Docs on one side, I want Ferry on the other side. I want to be able to like make that happen somehow, right? Without having to manually set it up every time. Bulk operations in document providers. So I can take three files and put them all into Google Drive at the same time. Much more kind of reliable background processing. I don't want apps to get dumped out of memory if they don't have to be, things like that. Now, with better devices, that's gotten a lot better than it used to be in early days, but even so. I have this idea as well that iOS could support locally attached storage. And you know how when you hit like an import button and you see a list of all the document providers in the system, like your Google Drive and your Dropbox and your iCloud Drive and whatever other apps you've got in there, OneDrive or whatever. I really fancy that you could also have like, you know, my locally attached hard drive sitting at the bottom of that list, and you could go in there and you could see a document provider that was just the files on a hard drive. And using that interface to transfer files to and from locally attached storage, I think that would be a very interesting opportunity. Even as I've already said in the show, that's not the kind of thing we should do. I think it would solve some problems for some people. And there might be good reasons to do that kind of thing as well. What else? I think one of the things Apple should do is they should push developers much harder to adopt modern APIs. And the one place I see this in a huge way is but apps that don't work correctly with iCloud Photo Library. So if you see, for example, if you use iTunes U, right? iTunes U does not work correctly with iCloud Photo Library, which is kind of inexplicable. But I think Apple should push harder in app review on people who just do like a half-hearted job with foundational APIs like that. Apps that don't use the share sheet correctly, look at YouTube, for example. The way that the YouTube app tries to share a video, it's just horrible. I think Apple should, you know, be a lot stricter on, you got to use the share sheet, you got to use iCloud Photo Library correctly. A number of different things could be done there, I think, just to make people tidy up. And I think it's quite interesting, you've mentioned this as well, Bradley, the sort of coming death of 32-bit iOS apps. A lot of schools are going to be in a lot of trouble with that if something doesn't happen with some of those apps as well.
Yeah, I mean, it needs to happen, but it's going to be painful.
So yeah, there's tons of things that I would like to see iOS do. You know, Federico on my other show, Canvas, he's interested in things like drag and drop between different apps in iOS. Of course, Apple's acquisition of Workflow, which we haven't really talked about that much. It remains to be seen what the future for automation is on iOS. And whether or not Workflow is going to get built into iOS 11 or something like that. I have heard nothing. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But that's another question that I think has to be answered as well. So interesting times.
It is. It is. And so there's our kind of our arguments for the iPad. I think I'll wrap it up with, for me, to say, as you listen to this kind of mini-series, always go back to your goals for your job. For your deployments, and start there and then work your way down. Don't start with any device. Don't start with any vendor or platform. Just start with your goals and then, you know, kind of work down the rabbit hole from there and see which one meets your needs. Because depending on your goals, Chromebooks may be a great fit. Or, you know, you might say, hey, we've got $500 per student. Let's get the Chromebook at $200 and let's get a iPad at $300. Maybe we'll give out two things. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the best thing for you. Every school and every context is going to be different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's I think what I just want people to do is I want people to just not dismiss iOS for facile reasons like, oh, there's no VGA connector or it's too expensive or something like that, you know, which is kind of, sometimes I get a bit frustrated listening to people going, no, iOS, it doesn't have a finder. How can that possibly work? Or, you know, something like that. And there are reasons not to use iOS. You know, some of them we've talked about. Maybe you're running a program where you've got to teach Photoshop. I don't know. But to just dismiss it for reasons of ignorance is, you know, disappointing, I think. And it's kind of unbecoming of education, I think, to not even think about the way things are going to be in the future. You know, and it's not even the future, right? It's now. That's a frustrating thing. It's like, if iOS isn't a mainstream platform now, when is it going to be a mainstream platform, you know? And that's mostly thanks to the iPhone, but it doesn't mean it's not true, you know?
I'll leave it with a podcast recommendation. I've never really done this before, but I found a new podcast that I really enjoyed that probably most people haven't heard of. It's called Everyone Hates Marketers, and Let's Change That. And it's a show about digital marketing. Really fascinating stuff about how you share social content and things like that. It's called Everybody Hates Marketers. So love the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. If you have any questions or any comments, you can submit those at outofschool.net. So, Fraser, any final words this week?
Go check out the new fifth generation iPad. It's really impressive.
All right. Have a good week, everybody.